It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
They say Intel inside, but what's actually inside those Intel microchips?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. There was a fascinating moment at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Normally, it's about gadgets and gizmos, but in the middle of Intel's presentation yesterday, CEO Brian Krzanich turned the discussion to human rights. Intel says it'll make sure that none of the raw materials in its chips comes from parts of the world where the proceeds lead to armed conflict and death, especially when they're mined in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Today, a federal appeals court hears arguments challenging a new rule forcing companies to disclose the use of so-called conflict minerals. Kate Davidson reports.
These minerals,
tin, tantalum, tungsten, and gold,
help you send texts. They make your phone vibrate. They are embedded in the supply chains of thousands of companies. Sasha Lezhnev with the Enough Project says some companies are enthusiastically rooting out conflict minerals.
I just traveled with Intel, with Motorola Solutions, and a couple of other companies to Congo, and we were identifying mines that they can start sourcing from in a clean manner.
But industry groups say compliance is costly and complex. J. Peter Pham is the director of the Atlantic Council's Africa Center. He worries the rule has an unwanted side effect.
Because of the reporting requirements and the burden put on global companies, they've simply chosen not to do business with any companies in the DRC.
He says that's driving many of the region's individual miners out of work. Under the rule, there's no penalty for using conflict minerals. The only damage is to brand reputation. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
There's news that China has lifted a ban on producing video game consoles in its free trade zone surrounding Shanghai. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz has been following this. Morning, Rob.
Good morning, David.
So why are they lifting this ban now?
Well, China had been talking about lifting this ban for a long time, but it never seemed to happen. This year, China's economy is slowing down, and the government has put a renewed focus on attracting more foreign investment. And one of the cornerstone economic policies of the Xi Jinping administration is setting up China's first free trade zone here in Shanghai to attract foreign companies. So lifting this 14-year-old ban is part of a bigger plan by China's government to do that.
Is it going to work as a way to stimulate the economy there?
Well, you know, in the past year, I've spoken to a lot of people inside the industry about this, and they're relieved that the ban has finally been lifted, but a lot of problems remain. You know, first off, I think there's a general sense of confusion among these companies about what they may have to give up in order to gain access to this new free trade zone. You know, some foreign companies will have to partner with local Chinese companies, and that's a concern for any company that cares about its intellectual property. Secondly, the biggest concern for the gaming industry in China happens to be the same for anyone in the entertainment industry, and that's piracy. Having access to the market is great, but it doesn't mean much if after you start operating here, all of your video games are pirated and your software starts appearing on the black market at a fraction of its retail price. That's exactly what happened to Hollywood here, and it remains a very big concern for the U.S. video gaming industry in China.
Marketplace's Rob Schmitz in Shanghai. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
See Marketplace live? You can enter to win a chance to join us at the Norse Theater in San Francisco on January 28th as we discuss the new era of philanthropy. Details and rules at marketplace.org/trip. On Monday, we heard from the CEO of a company that lends its seal of approval to stocks and other investments that comply with Islamic teaching. For instance, a company that makes a lot of money from gambling or the sale of alcohol or charging of interest wouldn't make the cut. Now, if money is power, then one place we have the most power is how we invest our savings. This is part of a larger movement called values investing. Amy Dominey, founder and CEO of Dominey Social Investments, has helped champion this movement. She joins us now. Amy, good morning.
Good morning.
We had a conversation with the CEO of a company that helps Muslim investors screen for things for their portfolio that are compliant with Sharia law. But I wanted to turn to you to put this into really a wider context. There are all sorts of ways to apply your personal values to your portfolio, right?
There certainly are. And the faith incentive has long been a strong incentive for doing it. John Wesley wrote a sermon on money. You know, he was an early Methodist, and he said that if it's a sin to be drinking alcohol, it's a sin to be making money from the production of alcohol.
Now, we think of screening portfolios, barring the door to companies that don't live up to our standards, but you can also engage companies that perhaps are not living up to what you want as a shareholder, maybe get them to do better.
Yes, and that's a kind of a constant tension in my field is why not invest in everything and use your investment as a means of talking to companies. Many companies are making real efforts to be better on their environmental footprints out there. And yet, in their political donations, many of them are supporting organizations that fight the concept of the reality of climate change. So this is something that we say, well, you're supporting something with one hand and fighting it with the other hand. This is a waste of shareholder money.
Now, we're coming off a year, Amy, when the stock indices did especially well. The NASDAQ Composite was up nearly 40% last year. Can a screened portfolio compete with a performance like that?
Well, I'm pleased to say Dominey Social Equity Fund did beat the S&P over the year by just a bit, but that was a great year. So, yes, it is possible to do. On balance, we've been able to outperform.
Amy Dominey, CEO of Dominey Social Investments, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And it's been a chilly in North America. How cold? It's so cold that they had to bring the polar bear inside at the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago. Even living in Chicago, she doesn't grow the extra layer of fat that bears get in their natural habitat. And it's so cold that the Manitoba Museum worked out that the other day it was colder in Winnipeg than on Mars, which, as you know, is further away from the sun than even Winnipeg. NASA's Curiosity rover had the Mars surface temperature at a balmy 20 below Fahrenheit. Ely, Minnesota was 22 below just now. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.